because of you, and thanks to you, we fought that back. We have to continue to fight to keep the voice of the people. Talk about movement to protect the people, to keep the voice of the people grounded in the community. 212-209-2950. Coming up next, an encore presentation of the Gary Noll Show.
Special presentation. We're helping our sister station WBAI to raise some funds, and we always are respectful when you dig in and become a buddy to the station, which many of you have, and thank you for that. But just keep in mind, we're a station that should have about, realistically, about 20 to 24 employees. I think we have 7 paid employees there, more or less, and they're overworked. And still, with such a skeleton crew, we're able to produce some outstanding broadcasting in a 24/7 period. And we do that not because of the money we make, because myself and others don't make any money, but because we believe in its mission. So today we're going to share insights of what being on the air means to honoring the mission of the station, but also honoring you and fighting the fight on your behalf. Because it's not possible for everybody to go out and join the ranks against different types of injustices. But for those of us who do, and those of you who have, including a whole lot of you, over 1,000 of you from my audience alone, who 2 weeks ago Saturday went down and were protesting our freedom of choice and how that's been abrogated by the special interest of the vaccine industry. They want to have the say-so on our body, and their choice, not ours, even with informed consent. They don't even want that. They're attacking anyone who questions their agenda. Joining me during this hour is someone who is very familiar, all of you, Christine Blosdale. She originally was out in KPFK in Los Angeles, but she's also helped raise funds for all of 5 Pacifica stations. And we're here to tie in several things, so it's an interesting program. We have not rehearsed our discussion, but I always like the fast, hard balls thrown. Nothing easy, nothing soft. And that's because I want this to also be the show that I do at noon. Hard hitting. Real scholarship that will stand the test of time. And that way, it'll be, I hope, of interest to you. At the same time, you'll find it interesting enough that even the premiums we'll be offering that Christine will talk about in a little bit, you'll say, yeah, that premium makes sense. You know, it could help me. It could enhance my well-being. And that's what we're about, enhancing our intellectual, our physical, our environmental, all of the different connections we have in life. We want to enhance those to get us to think and act at a higher level. Glad to have Reggie on board. Nice to be with you again today, Reggie.
Likewise.
And so, Christine, I'm going to turn it over to you. And yes, before we go into any pitching, let's start with the 5 issues that are really important to you, that hopefully are important to other people in this audience, and throw them at me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. And I'm so grateful to you, Gary, not only for the work that you do for WBAI and raising funds so that this amazing radio station, this true beacon of light, can still glimmer or be it. Sometimes it might be on a really soft light, but then other times it's like a spotlight and focusing on issues that are not talked about. They're not talked about, of course, on mainstream media, but they're also not talked about on those quote unquote progressive stations or outlets. So I just want to say thank you on behalf of the audience, and thank you on behalf of people who have actually never heard you, but what you have talked about for decades now, and in particular where we're at right now with this COVID nightmare, that information that you get out, it does make a huge impact. And so I just want to thank you on behalf of all the thousands and thousands of people who are now aware or a bit more aware about their health and the danger to their health right now. I would say the most important thing that I see happening and my concern, and I want to talk about today, is with this race to vaccinate the entire population of the world. It is a global race right now, and what agendas are being met by several different, by political systems, by pharmaceutical systems. But if you can encapsulate for us what's happening right now and some of those dangers that are inherent with that race, with that rush to get everyone vaccinated.
Okay, I'll lay it out as simply and succinctly as possible. First, this may surprise many people in this audience, but I have always been and remain fully pro-vaccine. I've never told someone don't get a vaccine or get a vaccine. What I say is, I support any vaccine that can be proven by gold standards of a double-blind placebo-controlled study using a saline solution as the placebo and following a group of people. Let's say you have 10,000 children that get all their vaccines, 10,000 children that get a placebo, but every 3 months you examine them to see what their immune markers are, their adaptive immunity against their innate immunity, infections, illnesses, and at the end of, let's say, 3 years, you can make a judgment. That would be considered legitimate. Secondly, you then take a look at the toxicological items, and that's where the big blind is in all of science. If you were to walk into a dentist's office and you were to take the amount of mercury that is in a dental filling, and that's why they're called mercury fillings. They're actually called silver fillings, but they're actually over 50% mercury. And if you were to take that same amount of mercury that they're going to put in your mouth as a filling, but you simply inject it in their body, you'd lose your license. You'd be arrested.
Right.
So in one way, we justify putting a toxicant into a body if it's a vaccine, but not if we're eating it. So the FDA and the EPA and other agencies have threshold of toxic load. So they say, well, you can't have more mercury than this. But if you ate fish out of a can, you're going to get lead, you're going to get mercury. So here's how many servings you can have before you get that. And yet when it comes to vaccines, we're giving multiple times those toxicants. So when I did my first paper, and it was simply a challenge, and this was 1972, America's leading person challenging how children were diagnosed and treated for diseases was a pediatrician, board certified, orthodox, Robert Mendelson in Chicago. And we had a discussion, and he said, if you want to know the truth of why I challenge vaccines for these children, why don't you look at what's in the vaccine? So I took every ingredient in the vaccine and I went to the toxicological data. I interviewed toxicologists, and the data is easy to obtain. And every single ingredient in every single vaccine had toxic reactions. I mean, when you have aluminum, which is in all the vaccines now as an adjuvant, and an adjuvant is to make it stronger, more powerful, to stimulate a hyper immune reaction, or mercury, and you're killing neurons. And so there was actually a film made showing this, where you see a tiny parts per billion. And I'll show you how bad this is. If you were to take a Olympic swimming pool and you drop one drop of one part per billion into that Olympic swimming pool of mercury, that would make the water toxic.
Wow.
The whole notion of that it's you're able to clean something up by diluting it, it's not true. It's still toxic. So then I started looking at all the evidence, and my goodness, it was in thousands of toxicological data, but nobody was looking in any of the toxicological data. So it actually came out, and it was a Supreme Court ruling that vaccines are, quote, inherently unsafe. All vaccines. All right? That's official. It is in all the books. So when people say, well, all vaccines are safe and effective, no, they're not. So then let's say every year they're promoting a new flu vaccine. Why a different one every year? Because it changes every year. We lose anywhere between, on the low end, maybe 30,000, the high end as high as 65,000, more or less, people from the flu. And when you go into a school, you'll see some teachers have the flu or cold, some students do. Most, by and large, overcome it. There will be some casualties, some people who are adversely affected, and some will actually die. The most people likely to die are going to be senior citizens with comorbidities in nursing homes, assisted living centers, hospice, and hospitals, and recovery because their immune systems are down. People taking chemotherapy and radiation, people who are on hormones and who are really depleted in their immune system, and then they get an infection. That infection is enough to kill an otherwise healthy person. So what do? We say, get your flu vaccine and be protected, and especially if you're a senior citizen. What does the actual science say? The people least likely to benefit and most susceptible to danger of taking a flu vaccine are senior citizens.
Right.
With COVID, they say, we got to get this to the frontline workers first. That's strange because the doctors that I have spoken with, the doctors that I've had on my radio show, all orthodox, by the way, all pro-vaccine, they say that the people who are on the front line in their hospitals, especially in the emergency wards, in fact, there was a physician just yesterday saying this, that in her 30-plus years as a board-certified emergency physician, the nurses are 30, 40, 50 years old. They're fine. But the patients who are older, who have 2.6 comorbidities, emphysema, heart disease, obesity, they're the ones who are going to become sickest and frequently die. So then we start seeing that, gee whiz, how do we know a vaccine works? Because none of these vaccines, none of the new ones, have had animal studies, and the superficial studies they did were disastrous. In one case, all the animals died, not when they got the vaccine, but when they came in contact with wild virus, which we do. We're exposed to viruses every day. If you were to say, how many people in this audience have cancer in the body today? I would say every person.
Yes.
Probably every person on Earth within a given week has a cancer cell in their body. So what if we tested a person with a machine that was so sensitive that if you even had one cancer cell, it would test you positive? Then you would have a whole pandemic worldwide of cancer. But then
you
actually develop cancer, and how many people die of it? It's a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction. That's what they've done with COVID. They've used a test called the PCR polymerase chain reaction. It was developed by someone I knew. In fact, I filmed him. I have a two-hour film of him on my website, GaryNoll.com, and Dr. Kerry Mullis, and he won the Nobel Prize in 1996 in chemistry for developing the polymerase chain reaction, or PCR test. And he says, this can't tell you which virus you're looking at. This can't be used for diagnosis. And the more times you amplify it to see it better, the less viral it's going to be. So Anthony Fauci says, well, yeah, above 35 replications, you're really not dealing with anything pathogenic. You're dealing with, you know, debris. And he is right, except he's even too much off on 35. It should be around 20. How many replications do you think the average person receiving the PCR test is getting? We're seeing about 40 to 45, meaning they're junk. So therefore, they're getting false positives. Now, these are otherwise healthy people. look at it like this. We're told you got to wear a mask. Okay, wear a mask if you want. You got to social distance. That's fine. Hygiene. I'm big into hygiene, by the way, and I support that. But then I ask, where's the science? We started off with political public health policies that were draconian before we had the science to justify any of it. We were working off a flawed model. And it's now been acknowledged it was a flawed model. The PCR was flawed. They're not doing confirmatory tests, and they're supposed to, according to their own guidelines. When was the last time you heard someone got a positive test and then was retested using different methods and markers? You haven't. So then we're told that all these deaths were from COVID. But we had people die of gunshots, and it was said COVID. Car wrecks, COVID. Even we found that nursing home owners were saying everything was COVID. Hospitals, everything's COVID, because there was a financial gain. A big industry grew up around exploiting COVID. Very mercenary. No, they were taking people who were dying in nursing homes, even dying in hospice centers, and marking it all as COVID. They were conflating figures. The New York Times says, well, if you're positive, you are a case. No, a case means you have an active virus and you're manifesting symptoms, and therefore you should be quarantined and you should have proper medical care. But the vast, vast, vast majority of people have experienced COVID, and their body's immune system is defeated, and now they're immune. In fact, a person I had on the show yesterday, he's the most cited scientist in the world on cardiology and nephrology. He is a heavy-duty scientist and physician. He's published over 1,000 articles in peer-reviewed PubMed, has over 400 different article citations, and yet he said that he had COVID, his wife had COVID, his children had COVID, his grandparents had COVID, therefore they wouldn't get the vaccine because they're immune.
Right.
They want to vaccinate everybody. It's already in the scientific literature that if you have certain autoimmune conditions, that this vaccine could cause a hyperimmune response that could kill you. And yet everybody gets the vaccine. So what about all the children? Children are virtually it is 99.99% a child will not die of this. And yet they want to vaccinate all the children. Bill Gates, who's not a scientist, who didn't graduate from college, who's not a medical doctor, who's done nothing in the field of health, who's an extremely mercenary individual, he says, got to vaccinate everybody on the planet. Well, gee whiz, by medical definitions of who should be excluded from vaccines, you're already eliminating at least half, if not two-thirds, of the world's population from that. But they don't care. They're into money and power. They want to vaccinate everyone, and then they want to do the Great Reset. That's a separate issue. So we've been misinformed about who actually has it, how many people should be vaccinated if they choose to be. And then the worst of it all is we've had orthodox medications off-label, meaning their patents are run out. They can't profit from it. So you could get one whole course of treatment with ivermectin for about $20, you know, a vaccine. And already tapes were just leaked today of a Pfizer person saying how they're going to up the price of this once it becomes permanent. Oh. Oh, they're using the word permanent. So they're not looking at a pandemic ending. They're looking at the end of life as we know it. So you're going to have to wear a mask, social distance, and have regular, probably monthly vaccines, experimental vaccines, for the rest of your life. Because they're saying it's forever. That's what happens when you get bad science by people connected in conflict of interest with politicians who are using this to allow private government partnerships to exploit a situation. So it's being exploited. We had ivermectin. That helps 80% of all people who are infected knock that infection, some within hours, generally within 2 to 3 days, and certainly within a week by using zinc, zithromycin, and ivermectin. It's in the peer-reviewed literature, over 50 studies, and yet they condemn the literature because there's nothing you can do in the world. There's nothing you can do to prevent it. All you have to do is wait for the vaccine. Well, that was a lie.
Yes.
We could have prevented that by having a healthier lifestyle, having a national program to help people who are overweight lose weight healthily, by having people have heart conditions to prevent and reverse their heart conditions or improve them, to have people with emphysema and other conditions that would become morbid and therefore make them more vulnerable to infection and death. We could help these people. We should have hyperbaric oxygen chambers in hospitals and not put everyone on lung ventilators, intubating. And this is from the pulmonologists who are seeing unnecessary procedures and death because of that. We also have hydroxychloroquine. One of the leading scientists in the world came out and risked his reputation, and boy, he was hammered. And that's something else. In my personal opinion, I've never seen anything quite like what we're seeing now with medical McCarthyism. This is the new corporatist red baiting. This is shaming people who are orthodox pro-vaccine scientists, pro-orthodox scientists. I'm not talking about a single alternative doctor or scientist. I'm talking about mainstream doctors being attacked because they're saying, but we can prevent this. Lifestyle can do that. Vitamin D, vitamin C, thousands of articles in the peer-reviewed journal on PubMed prove this. I've written articles on this. I wrote articles the very first week we were told what was happening. I started saying, you can build up your immune system naturally. You can protect yourself naturally, as you can from cancer and heart disease and dementia and anything else. We have the science on our side. We don't have the media on our side. We don't have advertisers on our side. We don't have a compliant and unfortunately frequently distracted public on our side. We have massive hubris out there. We have dictatorial control over a person's body. Do you ever see a commercial where someone is, well, yeah, I saw one for orange juice. That's a good commercial. But by and large, the vast majority of commercials are for alcohol. That destroys your immune system and cells and heart and brain, liver and kidney. And for fast foods that cause your telomeres to shorten and diseases to occur, colorectal cancer, ovarian cancer, breast cancer. It's in the scientific literature. They have no science whatsoever on their side. None. Zero. Zip. Showing that the average American diet, the foods you commonly see, are healthy. Eat this thing that has the meat. Oh, and by the way, we have fried chicken with a glazed donut on top and bottom. That's the new glazed donut. And are they going to say, and this will allow you to live a longer life, healthier life, it's good for your body? No. But the impression is satisfy your immediate cravings. So one just doubles down in stupidity after the other when it comes to making a product that is so radically unhealthy. So here's the irony. We have become extremely accessible in our beliefs to making things take a shortcut. I'm hungry. I want a pizza. But I don't just want a pizza. I want a pizza that has so much cheese that they have to put it in the crust. Well, I'll go one better. How about putting it in a big outer rim, and we'll fill that with cheese. We'll open it up to show you all that stringy cheese. Now, of course, the next morning when your eyes are puffy and you got mucus coming out all of your orifices, you might say maybe this wasn't a good idea. And we don't want you not eating this very spicy meat and suddenly you see someone being smacked with a food that's come alive and is now eating them. But don't worry, don't stop eating the food. No, take this antacid. But won't that block all digestion? Yeah. So what I'm eating won't really be digested, kind of dumped in the intestine? Yeah. So I'll be overfed and undernourished? Yeah. Won't that make me more susceptible to intestinal inflammation and possibly diverticulitis, colitis, spastic colon, colorectal cancer, and polyps? Oh, yes. But you're telling me not to stop eating the food, just take a drug. Oh, and by the way, if you have some sniffles, right, why worry? Take this drug and the side effect is death. But we'll put some things you can watch. And I'm thinking, surely people can't be buying this, but they are. The consumption of meat and fried food and garbage has gone up. So what I'm saying is this. You have a choice in life of who do you trust and what do you believe. And if you make the mistake of trusting the wrong people, and then you're going to accept that what they say is something you should not be concerned with or even what you should support. Weapons of mass destruction. Remember, the last thing we want to see is that cloud in the sky.
That mushroom cloud. Yes.
So those people have not lost their jobs. They're as powerful as ever. Judith Miller, who made the false claims about the curveball was the secret guy. We already on WBAI, I was reporting on what we knew and our sources saying that he had been discredited within the intelligence community. Abbott in Scooter Libby's office, choice chief of staff for the vice president, Dick Cheney, it was select your intelligence to match what we need so we can have regime change. And that's what was anyone fired? Did anyone take responsibility? No. Are the same people around today telling us what to believe? Yes. Were some of these people who were around and more? Yes. Invasion of other countries? Yes. So we're believing those people today?
Yes.
So
yes.
That's why be very careful about what you believe today. Christina, back to you.
Oh, and a perfect example is look at Vietnam. Look at the over a million Vietnamese were killed during that. American soldiers came back. The ones that were able to come back still suffer to this day the trauma of Vietnam. And the treasury, you know, all of the money and the lives and everything, the devastation from Vietnam. And then 40 years later, McNamara said, oh, we got it wrong. It didn't really happen. You know, the reason why we did this didn't exist. And they knew it didn't exist. They wanted to get their war on. And whatever it is, if it's a war on drugs, if it's a war on communism, if it's a war on COVID, you follow the money trail and you do see where the incentive is on something like this. My concern always is too, is that look, if I sell you a sandwich, Gary, if yes. I say, come into my shop and I'm going to sell you a sandwich or a nutritional bar or anything, and you take it and you eat it and you get extremely sick or injured, permanently injured, or die, you or your family have the right to sue me. I have liability if I have a product out in the market. Now, here's something where they're saying, we're going to make this a mandate. You know they're floating that balloon. They haven't yet, but they're going to. If you want to travel, if you want to work, if you want to have a bank account, if you want to go to the grocery store, if you want to send your children to school, there's going to be a mandate. Now, if you're mandated to put something into your bloodstream, into your body that will be there for the rest of your life, however long that is, and there's no liability, well, you've just created one of the most possibly evilest systems of not only controlling the health and welfare of the entire population on the planet. To me, that's a dangerous thing. There's no liability.
There has not been liability since Ronald Reagan, and this was all political. I've written about this, the person in Congress who got indemnification, a get-out-of-jail-free pass for all the vaccine makers. Until that time, vaccine makers were very concerned because if their vaccines were bad, they could be sued, and they were.
Yeah.
Look at all the childhood illnesses that we've never had in American history. Certainly not in the last 50 years, but starting with the increased schedules of vaccines, asthma, upper respiratory tract infections, different
autism.
Problems of autism, learning disabilities, delayed learning, inner ear infections, they are manifesting higher than any Western country in the world. And then when you start looking at the actual statistics in other countries, they have a delayed process of not giving all the vaccines. Like we give the MMR vaccine, one of the most dangerous vaccines, in my opinion, but they will give one component of that at a time. So we're giving hepatitis B vaccines to babies.
Oh.
Well, the mother, you could test the blood to see if she doesn't have hepatitis B, then there's no reason to give that vaccine.
Yeah.
But the reason is not about the health of the person. The reason is profit. And we have to understand that. And yet here's where there's a cognitive disconnect. We understand the military-industrial complex loves wars. They must have a shrine in every major plant in America that they go in, they have to first kiss the feet of the god of war before they go to work that day because it's very, very, very profitable. How profitable? Well, this year, on the books and off the books, there'll be over $1 trillion given to the military-industrial complex, yet they'll cry, it's not enough. It's more than enough. We could reduce that by 80% and still defend ourselves. But when you're gorging yourself and you've lost the appetite control, more is always better. And therefore, you give money to those people who make sure that the politicians give you more, the Pentagon gives you more. Everybody's in that loop. Everybody's interconnected. And you're set for life. You always have a job. So unfortunately, the American public doesn't see any of this. Then you have to have a war. So you better get your intelligence agencies to find you a place to invade. Syria. Yeah, look at Syria. You know, weapons used on his own, chemical weapons used on his own citizens. Oh, well, hold on. Now, Seymour Hersh found that that was a lie. Oh, and others found that Ms. Beasley, one of the great investigative journalists in the world, found out it was a lie. In fact, six journalists went there and found out it was a lie. It was the United States supported terrorists, but ours were the good terrorists, as if there's a good terrorist. Yeah, we were supporting al-Nusra, and that was supporting ISIS. So everything is a lie when you look closely enough when it comes to who benefits at the official level. So on the one hand, if someone says, give us more money so we can make sure that there's more checks for executives at these seven major defense contractors, and yeah, we are going to have to invade different companies, we're going to destabilize democracy. We did it with Mossadegh in Iran in 1953 and reinstated the Shah of Iran, who then was under CIA and State Department control and killed tens of thousands and tortured hundreds of thousands of its citizens, which ultimately led to Iran's Ayatollah Khomeini, changing the whole policy. We never looked at our participation in that. Did we create any of this? And we've created this in Honduras and also Nicaragua.
Yes.
We've created this in Vietnam, all over the world. And yet we take no responsibility and we never look back. So if you were to know the truth of all the operations, if on a screen when a politician from the president to a cabinet member, Congress, or anyone else said something, you could see the truth side by side with their statements. We'd never vote for any of these people, right or left.
Right, exactly.
If we could see an advertisement where it says, we have the beef, and then I show you what actually happens from the scientific literature in someone's body with all that non-fiber, high heterocyclic amine containing cancer carcinogenic meat, we wouldn't eat the meat. If a person smoked a cigarette, you see the Marlboro Man, but then on the side you saw the Marlboro Man with end-stage emphysema, we wouldn't smoke. If we saw 1 million brain cells, 1 million kidney cells, heart cells destroyed after every drink of hard alcohol, we wouldn't drink. But if we have a celebrity telling us, I drank this vodka, you should too. It's only $1,000 a bottle, but hey, you can afford it. Well, vodka doesn't have any taste. So it's the illusion of what you're going to taste. And if you have a glass of orange juice, and a glass of bourbon, and a glass of, you know, a glass of brandy, and you have a glass of apple juice, it's the apple juice and orange juice that's going to be good for you, and you're going to like the taste. Everything else is an acquired taste. Our belief systems are acquired. To support dictators is acquired. To support Saudi Arabia, even though it's shown that they behead people, and they're anti-gay, and they're anti-women's rights, but we still act like they're really cool people. Why? Because they give us contracts.
Yes.
We're willing to look away at everything that's bad, as long as there's something gained. What we never ask in America is, what do we gain by being wrong about everything all the time? The media is wrong all the time on everything they're talking about, because everything first has to start now blatantly, openly, non-hidden. There's no opaqueness in this. They are leading by agenda. Everything has to fit the agenda. So if my health, if my body, if my future to be alive and well and thrive is coming from the New York Times or Washington Post or CNN or any of these other, or even some Pacifica stations, then I am not going to listen to any of their advice because they have never been right. They defend tyranny. They defend bad foods. They defend all this. And those who don't defend this, they are excluded. Hit the door. You're no longer welcome. I'm just telling the truth. We don't care about the truth. We care about ideology. But aren't we supposed to be about the truth? Well, maybe back when Damon Runyon was around, or Mr. Stone, but other people. But we're not today. I have Stone I'm talking about, or Mencken, when we had real journalism. But we excluded. Isn't it interesting? If you want to find the truth about anything today, you have to go out to the valley of the elephants where they go to die, where there's no one else around in their last moments. Because right now, you wouldn't know what Chris Hedges or Matt Taibbi or Gary Knoll were saying about anything because of the attacks by Wikipedia, the attacks by the mainstream media, and now considering anyone who tells the truth a domestic terrorist. That is really cool. When you're smart enough, using the most scrutinizing principles of behavior modification, to take scientists, doctors, mothers and fathers of adversely affected children from vaccines, and you make them the enemy for questioning a particular vaccine, and even wanting to be hesitant to see the results before you jump in. I mean, what kind of person would be the first to say, hey, brand new, no long-term results on safety and efficacy, could harm my body based upon its RNA. It could be there for the rest of my life, turning on manufacturing these spike proteins. Sign me up. What person would do that?
Nobody would do that. Nobody would do that.
No one who's thinking about the truth and looking for it would do that. You would say, let's engage in the precautionary principle. Let's first see, does it do any harm?
Yes.
Once you show it doesn't do harm, fine. Now show me that it does good. I want efficacy as well as safety. All right? When those two hurdles are crossed, then I'm on board. I've been promoting the use of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and other therapies that are mainstream orthodox medicine. I've never done that in my career. I have not mentioned the alternative approaches, nor have I had on a single alternative doctor to talk about alternative approaches. I could tell you about ozone intravenous. I could tell you about intravenous vitamin C with glutathione, knocking out viruses and helping restore health. I have chosen not to do it because I found this a wonderment that are the people that we are supporting are the ultra-Orthodox doctors and scientists who don't believe in anything alternative, and yet they're the ones going up to fight the other Orthodox doctors and scientists. It's one of the most unique phenomena in American history. So this is what's going on. So that brings us up to half the program is gone. We haven't even done a single pitch, and we're 36 minutes in.
Well, so because we needed to lay that down. We needed to
be a regular pitch. Yeah. Christina, I wanted people to know that we're giving them some solid information, whether they agree or disagree. If you go to GaryKnoll.com and go under articles, every article is there. I've written hundreds of articles. I've written over 20 in the last year on COVID and the immune system and vaccines. And by the way, I learned something years ago, and then I'll shut up and you can then help us raise a little money. I was doing an important article, and it was on the politics of cancer. This is the early 1970s. And it says general media. And the whole room, which was Judy Garland's old townhouse, there was this big, long table. And there were about 12 people around the table. And each person told the publisher why he should not publish this article that I brought to them. And we'll lose all of our advertisers. You don't go up against the cancer industry. That's a sacred cow. We'll get slammed by the media. And finally, everybody said, no, no, no. And then the publisher had a very soft voice. And I was sitting right beside him. I'd never met any of these people, by the way. And I didn't even submit my article. One of the publisher's friends read my article, which won the Audi Award for investigative journalism in Iowa Town. And he said, do you really believe that we can save lives by showing the truth about how cancer is dealt with in this country? And I said, sir, I believe that we can save lots of lives if people know the truth. Right now, they don't. And my sources are impeccable. My source was Pat McGrady Sr. He was one of the top people at the American Cancer Society for 25 years. And his son, Pat McGrady Jr., who is the Newsweek bureau chief in Moscow, came to see me and said, I'm laying this on you. I'm giving this to my father. And I had lots of meetings. He gave me the truth. I wrote about it. So he said, okay, we're going to publish. And the whole room just went into an uproar. So I got out on the street, and I'm about to leave, and this guy came up to me. Punches me with his finger in my chest. And he says, this article will not appear in my publication. I said, buddy, it's not your publication, it's the publisher, and it will appear, and you and I will never speak again. And I never once in 26 years of doing over 58 cover stories exposing the corruption in all major medicine, a whole series called Medical Genocide, it was read by tens of millions of people because one person, a publisher, believed that the truth should get out. And I had it, and I shared it for over a quarter century. And so that's where I live. That's what I'm used to doing. And I'm telling you, with all the research I've done, but you know how he kept us from being sued? Because everyone was getting sued if they were investigative journalists, including this publisher's other authors who were top investigative journalists. He hired a top lawyer who was Law Review. I believe she was from Harvard. And the word was nothing got published until she proved that everything was legal and factual. So she would go over every single thing. And we would have discussion, and she'd say, prove it. Give me another source. Give me another source. In 26 years, not a single article, and these were hard-hitting articles. In fact, 60 Minutes did a special on one of them, and 2020 won two Emmys with one of my articles that that Geraldo Rivera did on Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski, who had a successful cancer therapy, still does, by the way.
Yes.
And he was being hounded out of medicine, and we stopped that. In any case, never one of my articles could be challenged on facts. That same standard, I have an in-house counsel, I have an in-house scholar in residence. Every single thing we review is must pass scholarship for accuracy and be legally viable to withstand cross-examination in a court of law. That's the standards that I use. I don't use conspiracy theories. I don't use anonymous. You'll never see anonymous in my articles. If a person's not willing to go on the record, they don't get in. So that's what we're dealing with today, and that's why we have WBAI. That's why there is a place where you can hear these stories every day. And look, do you think that for a second that a lot of people in the audience believe any of this stuff? No, but they're not doing my homework. They're not interviewing the people I interview. They're not talking to the experts. They don't have a background in science. I do. I'm a PhD in human nutrition and public health science and a senior research fellow at the Institute of High Biology for 33 years in anti-aging medicine, and have done over 46 clinical studies published in peer-reviewed literature. So I'm bringing all that I can as a journalist and as a health expert to the problem that we face here. That's all I have to say. Over to you.
Thank you, Gary. And we have actually created a package for our wonderful listeners who want to gain more information from you. Not only do we have something that is going to give them life-saving and enhancing information, but also something that they can take immediately and share with their family and friends as well. And we're calling this Gary Null's Immune Stuff Mega Pack. And it's a mega pack because there's a lot of things involved in it. And we're going to go over those items that are included. I'm going to throw out the phone number, though, right now so that you can support the programming that you just heard. You will not hear it anywhere else. You will not have the facts backed up after year after year after year, as Gary Null has done with his research and investigations. The phone number to call to support that is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Now, I'm going to say, for those of you who are out there who have the ability to pledge at a higher level than the $150 donation that we're asking for a thank you gift, if you have the ability to pledge at the $1,000 level or the $5,000 level, or heck, if you're someone whose life's been very good to you, and we're talking to New York, we're talking to the East Coast here, so I know that there are people that have the ability to help support BAI, to keep voices like this on the air. The one and only Gary Null needs to be heard and needs to stay on the air. So if you'd like to support that, you can call up and pledge at any level. But if you have the ability to pledge at that $5,000 or $10,000 level, do it right now. It's 212-209-2950. And if you would like to take home a thank you gift, if you would like us to send this to your home, then we would be happy to. And it is called Gary Null's Immune Stuff, the Mega Pack. It is a mere $150 donation, which you can spend that going out to dinner. Hell, you could spend that going out to lunch in some spots in New York. But This package includes the Gary Knowles immune stuff. Also, you get the Gary Knowles green stuff, and extremely important right now, and we've been talking about this for most of the program, how to supercharge. It's called Supercharge Your Immune System, and this is a DVD from Gary Knoll examining the factors in our diet, lifestyle, and environment that adversely affect our immune system. And if you want to be a rebel, if you want to be a revolutionary against this nightmare scenario that we're being told, this is something that you can do that's proactive for your health. Not once did I hear in America and in Australia and globally, not once did I hear the importance of boosting our immune systems. Not once did I hear you need to take something nutritionally to help your cells, to help your body fight off not only COVID, but flu and to keep cancer at bay. Not once. But I was told to put a mask on, to limit my oxygen. I was told, don't worry, you can keep doing what you're doing, and we're just going to shove vaccine into your body. Don't worry, you can travel one day soon. You'll be able to work one day soon, if only you got this. But not once was I told to boost my immune system and to pay attention to my immune system. This is a package for you so that you can do that. And the number to call to get a hold of it, again, you want to ask for Gary Knowles Immune Stuff, the mega pack. It's a $150 donation, but if you can pledge more, please do that. And if you want to get several of these packages, that's a very smart thing to do. And get these, get the green stuff, get the immune stuff to your family, to your relatives as soon as you can. It's a $150 donation though. 212-209-2950. And to go over the items in this package and why they're so important right now for you is, I'm going to throw it back to Gary. And Gary, I'm super excited about the immune stuff. I've looked at the ingredients. This is some powerful, powerful nutrition for people. Can you tell us a little bit about the immune stuff that's in this package?
But I want to make it very clear. I'm not making any claims. I don't make medical claims ever. none at all. I believe that if you want a good immune system, you have to understand your immune system. That's why the documentary explains in great detail what your immune system is, what its components are, and how you can build on it, and how you can strengthen it, and how you can help yourself just stay healthier longer. Look, we're all exposed to viruses and bacteria all the time. We all have cancer cells growing in our body, and then the body's immune system with natural killer cells destroy those cancers. The stronger our immune system, the less vulnerable we are to any of these diseases. The weaker our immune system, the more overweight, the more sedentary, the more depressed, the more anxious, the more vulnerable we are. So this is not anything new. This is all supported by thousands of studies. So I simply wanted to offer my contribution to assisting a person who cares about their health. So what's in the immune system? Well, this is the best blend that I could find to put together: astragalus, vitamin C, orange juice, L-lysine, acerola, arnica, citrus bioflavonoids, turmeric, green tea, olive leaf extract, echinacea, mushroom blends. I took 10 different mushrooms, such as a turkey tail and lion's mane and shiitake and cordyceps and reishi, maitake, et cetera, zuling. And I put them all together because I studied the scientific literature. I wanted these in there. And these are organic. And grapes, grape seed extract, quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. And if you want to know why would Gary select quercetin for his immune, why don't you just Google quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, and you'll see why it's in there. Rutin, R-U-T-I-N. And then probiotics. This is a very powerful probiotic, all natural. Bacillus, subtilis, zinc, piperine, selenium. So, again, I make no claim. I'm merely saying that the best I can do, I put into immune stuff. And yeah, I take this, and I advocate people who care about their overall health to take this. So that's what's in here. Now, where else can you get all those ingredients in one serving? But I also have green stuff here. 16 vegetables loaded with phytonutrients. And I want the vegetables that are most important. I want organic kale and organic barley grass and spinach and parsley and carrots and oat-beta-glucan and spirulina and celery and onions and cauliflower and cabbage and broccoli and radishes and broccoli sprouts and collard greens and apples in this delicious blend. So you've got green stuff. You're getting a sample of that. You got red stuff. Immune stuff. And on top of all that, you also have the documentary. And the documentary, Supercharge Your Immune System. Because if you know about your immune system, and I have experts in this film, and it's really a well-produced, it's award-winning documentary on how to help your immune system. Now, mind you, we're talking about prevention, just to wake up every day and know that you're doing something positive when you're taking the right things into your body. Because we know we do something negative when we take the wrong things into our body. I mean, I've counseled almost 70,000 people. I've never charged one penny. My whole life, every person I've counseled, I've done free. Every radio syndication I've done free. BAI, 45 years ago, I was given a salary, and I saw they were having trouble paying payroll. I never accepted a salary from that day till then. PFW, 36 years. KPFK, 33 years. So I've committed myself to helping those who need help. And sometimes the radio station needs help, but the audiences need help. If they weren't interested in being healthier, they wouldn't listen to my show. There would be no purpose to it. I deal with health. I deal with anti-aging. I deal with the environment, and I deal with health issues. And of course, there's a lot of health issues that we have to deal with. Closing down nuclear power plants is just one example. And we went out and marched. We marched the largest demonstration in New York history, I was told, in front of the governor's office to close down Indian Point's two power plants. We were there. In fact, the head of Pacifica was in town that day, Grace Aaron with Summer Reese, and they were there. They couldn't believe the size of the crowd. And then later we went over, and Helen Collicott and others were down in Riverside Park. And then we marched on Saturday morning. 10,000 of us marched over 10 days from Prospect Park down to Washington, D.C., and we end up in the park right across the street from the White House. And I was there, and I was talking to the public about why we should not eat genetically engineered food but support local grown food. So this is what I do. And anyone who's listened over the last 45 years, I know that's what I do. It's consistent every day. New information every day. Always from peer-reviewed journals. Not crazy stuff. So when I create a product, I'm going to put everything I know into that product. Everything I can think of that I believe supports the notion for people who want to be healthier. And that's what I do. What I do not do is say, if you take this, it'll alleviate that or cure that. I've never done that. I wouldn't do that. That would be irresponsible. So if you want to really do something good, then start supporting the station, whatever you can. Get this premium package. Use it. Watch the film. Share it with others. And start changing your lifestyle to have a stronger immune system. I mean, if nothing else, it's not about politics. I don't share my body politics on the station. I'm pretty anti-political. I certainly support those people whose movements can change everyone's life for the better, and I challenge those who don't. We're going in the opposite direction. But my goal is to get people to live a longer, healthier, and happier life. And that's what I've devoted 55 years of my career to. I've been in this 55 years in the trenches every day. And I'll continue. Because I believe that people are worth it. I believe if you have a gift, you give a gift. And there's no discrimination about who you give the gift to. If a person, even my enemies, people who don't like me, because they don't understand me. They can't get it.
It's because you speak the truth, Gary.
They just can't get it. And yet, someone who has tried to even fire me from a station when I found that they were sick, I put the word out. I'm willing to help you if you want my help. Now, turns out they didn't ask for my help. But I hold no grudge. I don't walk around with yesterday's problems in my mind. I don't want violence. I don't want vengeance. I'm a Gandhian. I grew up reading everything Gandhi had written that I could find, as well as Martin Luther King, who was also inspired by Gandhi. I believe in social change where it's needed. I believe in changing any injustice to a justice, but doing it nonviolently. So I reach out. I help everybody I can. Not everybody wants that help. But all you have to do is tune in, and you'll see those people who want help, and they're always going to be given what I can. So that's it from my end here. And we're almost up to the end of our program. In fact, we've only got about a minute to go. So I'll let you wrap this up. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in. And to the station management, no, we didn't pitch the whole hour. We only pitched about 15 minutes. But we wanted to give some insights and just to give people an idea that we can make pitching more interesting and even more dynamic by dealing with issues that we're all concerned about or should be. Christine?
Here, Gary. Ah, thank you so much. Folks, if you would like to contribute to keep this amazing radio station on air and to continue to hear the wisdom from Gary, I know I've learned so much over the years and I want to continue to learn so much. He's the one who's fighting the good fight. He's the one who's speaking out on our behalf, on our for our welfare in health and wellness. And I couldn't think of a better thank you gift to give to you. We're offering Gary Knowles Immune Stuff Mega Pack. It is a $150 donation. And again, if you can pledge more than that or you want to get multiple packs, you're welcome to do so. The number to call is 212-209-2950. It's 212-209-2950. You will receive the Immune Stuff, Gary Knowles Immune Stuff. You will get Gary Knowles Green Stuff and also the Supercharge Your Immune System DVD. We send that to your home with our love and appreciation. And remember, these the containers that have the Immune Stuff and the Green Stuff, they are large, so they're going to last you quite a bit. And we want to make sure that you get this for you and your family and share this with others. Please do. If you can get more than one package, do so at this number, 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. And Gary, I just want to say thank you so very much for all of the wealth of wisdom that you share and your fierceness for trying to protect our rights as human beings, not only with health, but I know you have spoken out during these injustice, the wars of injustice and so much. So thank you so much, Gary.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. And thank you all for listening. I'm on every day at noon, and I look forward to having more to share with you tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.
April 7th, 451, Attila the Hun sacks the town of Metz and attacks other cities in Gaul. April 7th, 1906, Mount Vesuvius erupts and devastates Naples. April 7th, 1933, Prohibition ends in the United States. April 7th, 1969, the Internet's symbolic birth date. April 7th, 2021, the date by which you must be enrolled in WBAI's subscriber list. That's right, you must become a member for $25 or more to WBAI by this April 7th in order to vote in a very important election that could determine the continued survival of WBAI. April 7th, the date of record by which you must be a member. $25 a month, the basic annual membership rate to become a subscriber and a listener sponsor and a member of WBAI. Won't you do it now? The new pledge number, 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. or pledge online at give2wbai.org. Once again, we have a new pledge number. It's 212-209-2950 or give2wbai.org. But do it now, won't you? And do it with a credit card, because it's too late for you to mail in your pledges. And thanks for keeping us alive here at WBAI New York.
The time now is 1 p.m. Stay tuned for Leonard Lopate at Large here at WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Leonard Lopate at Large. I'm Leonard Lopate. President Biden's plan to finance $2 trillion in federal infrastructure spending has touched off a new battle in Washington that centers on the White House's decision to try to raise rates on major U.S. corporations and unwind some of the core tax cuts adopted under President Trump in 2017. And the White House also seeks other tax increases and policy tweaks to ensure companies don't dodge their bills domestically by shifting their profits abroad. Republicans are objecting to the price tag. Before any new legislation is written, I would suggest that they read a new book called The Wealth Hoarders, How Billionaires Pay Millions to Hide Trillions, is written by Chuck Collins and published by Polity Books. Mr. Collins, a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., where he directs the program on equality and co-eds inequality.org, joins us now. Welcome to our show.
Hi, Leonard. Great to be with you.
Before he took office, President Biden wrote in Foreign Policy magazine that corporate corruption is a threat to national security. He wrote, quote, "I will lead efforts internationally to bring transparency to the global financial system, go after illicit tax havens, seize stolen assets, and make it more difficult for leaders who steal from their people to hide behind anonymous front companies." And then more recently, he said, in 2019, an independent analysis found that there were 91 Fortune 500 companies that used various loopholes to pay $0 in federal income taxes on U.S. income. That's wrong, and we'll put an end to it with the Made in America tax plan. I'm assuming that you were pleased by all of that.
Yeah, that's not bad for the senator who represented the state of Delaware for 36 years, which is kind of the weak link in our own wealth hiding system. But yeah, I think it's promising because we're really not going to be able to raise revenue at all from the wealthy if this wealth hiding apparatus is in place. So it's great that he's saying that.
We'll get to Delaware in just a moment. I always thought that Americans who wished to hide their money went to offshore tax havens like Switzerland, the Cayman Islands, Panama, Bermuda. Did things change in 2009 when the Obama administration made it harder for U.S. citizens to hide money in foreign banks with laws like the Foreign Accounts Tax Compliance Act and then entered into international treaties to require global banks to meet U.S. reporting standards?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Leonard. You know, the image of the Swiss bank account where you didn't have to disclose the owner is a little outmoded now. You know, U.S. citizens wishing to hide their money, Swiss banks now have treaties with the U.S. to report on depositors. And many European countries have agreements among themselves to disclose, you know, the who owns bank accounts and report that information back to the U.S. government. What's interesting is the U.S. government is kind of the laggard. We don't have a reciprocal understanding with those countries. So now illicit wealth, you know, Russian oligarchs and wealth hiders are bringing their money here to the United States. We're the weak link now.
And haven't we become the world's second largest tax haven, accounting for over 21% of offshore global services for money hiding and illicit wealth storage?
Yeah, and that and we got that ranking from Tax Justice Network, their secrecy index. Only the Cayman Islands is more porous than the United States, and that's directly because of our some of our states like Delaware and South Dakota that kind of have very low standards. Let's put it that way.
Because it's all made possible by a federalist system of government. So each That's state right. can make its own, set its own rules.
Yeah, you know, the sort of race to the bottom between states as to who will have the lowest standards. Delaware for non-disclosure of ownership, who's really behind a company. South Dakota for creating a dynasty trust to sequester your wealth for centuries. You know, the only fix really is probably a federal overriding fix that basically takes away these states' competitive disadvantages with each other.
Hmm. Well, hasn't Delaware, as you point out, been a major go-to destination for tax dodgers and money launderers for quite a while? How long? How far back does this go?
It probably goes back to the DuPonts, you know, in the way in which Delaware was formed, really to facilitate commerce at the high, you know, the large companies. They've always had a very corporate friendly judicial system. They have always had these limited liability companies where you can call an 800 number and create an anonymous corporation in 8 minutes. And, wow. You know, it's particularly attractive if you're trying to hide the identity of the owner. So that's why you have, you know, sex trafficking websites and lawyers for the former president who are trying to pay hush money. And, you know, other criminal enterprises love Delaware limited liability companies because they not only have privacy, they have complete secrecy from law enforcement.
So it generates $1.3 billion in direct annual revenue for Delaware, which is about 28% of the state's budget. And as you point out, it has a very corporate-friendly judiciary, the Delaware Chancery Court, which rejects challenges to corporate rules. And that would make it all legal, wouldn't it?
That's right. You know, and I think that Delaware as a state raises probably half their state revenue from various forms of corporate registration fees and collecting from accounts that people haven't claimed. You know, they call themselves the first state, but I call them the first freeloader state. they're not raising money from their own citizens. And in a way, that's probably the attraction. Everybody agrees to sort of look the other way because their taxes are so low.
And so nearly one half of all U.S. corporations are registered in Delaware, and there are now, as you point out, more corporations than people there, 1.3 million entities in a state with a population of 960,000.
No, it's remarkable. I mean, given that, it's kind of significant that their state attorney general supported some important reforms at the federal level. At the end of 2020, Congress passed something called the Corporate Transparency Act, which kind of gets at what we're trying to fix here. It says corporations need to disclose who their beneficial owners are. We're still ironing out how that law is going to work, and it excludes trusts and partnerships. So I'm sort of worried that the wealth hiders will manipulate the system, but it's a step in the right direction. And well, Delaware, you know, kind of is embarrassed enough to admit that there was something broken is meaningful.
Still, over half of those corporations are limited liability companies. What are they?
It's a form of ownership. It's different than a sort of corporate form, but it's essentially a form of a company. And that it's not that unusual to, you know, all states have, you can incorporate what's called a limited liability company so that, you know, if my house burns down and it's owned by an LLC, you know, you can only be sued for what happened at that property. It limits the liability, but it's become a form of hidden activity in that thing.
One of the more shocking statistics is that This address in Wilmington, 1209 Orange Street, is a mail drop for over 285,000 companies.
Yeah, it goes to show that the corporations themselves don't have to have a physical office or presence. They just need a mail drop. Similarly, in the Cayman Islands, there's one building called Ugland House that is home to some 40,000 corporations globally are incorporated there. So you sort of see that all you need is a mail slot and an address, and that they provide that service.
And you mentioned South Dakota. In the 1980s, South Dakota, which has no state income tax, repealed rules that put a time limit on trusts. Instead of being forced to liquidate a trust after a certain number of years, the state allowed rich families to continue to hide their money. How does that work?
Yeah, well, typically, as you imply, a trust has to terminate, usually within a lifetime and a half. And there's an old archaic rule called the rule against perpetuities. And it's basically saying, look, you just can't have agreements that tie things up forever. And what's happened is that the wealth defense industry, you know, in a small state like South Dakota, they basically bought the legislature, changed the law, kind of made it a state that could attract, you know, trusts. Similarly, did this very similar thing with usury laws, you know, usury laws that would constrain how much interest you could charge. They repealed their state usury laws, and that's why all the credit card companies, when you read the fine print, they're all based in South Dakota. So South Dakota sort of opened itself up, lowered its standards, and has provided these services for their financial industry.
And it's really growing. You note that in 2010, South Dakota trust companies managed a total of $57 billion. Last year, that had grown to over $300 billion.
Yeah, and they, you know, I mean, this is a tiny employer, but it's a, you know, now they're attracting wealth from around the world because one of the benefits is if you have a trust that can live for centuries and you're trying to build up sort of dynastic wealth and you want to make sure that your great great grandchildren never have to work a day in their lives, then you want to create a dynasty trust incorporated in South Dakota. Now a couple other states are trying to get into the business, Wyoming and Alaska. And they're all just, you know, again, just lowering their standards as low as possible. But South Dakota takes the cake because they basically promise never to reveal the identity of the trust owners.
Those dynasty trusts are something that you're familiar with, right? You begin your book by describing your own experiences in this area. You came into a $500,000 inheritance when you were 25 years old.
Yeah, part of my interest in this topic is I grew up in a wealthy family, and I kind of got an intimate front row seat into this whole way in which wealthy families kind of have their own set of rules, if you will, when it comes to paying taxes and creating trusts. And there's all these trusted advisors and bankers and trust officers and family offices that all exist to help wealthy families keep accumulating their wealth and then pass it on to the next generation.
You now, call it the wealth defense industry.
Yeah, and it's not me. I mean, that's a term that a number of social scientists have used over the years. Jeffrey Winters, a social scientist, talks about how in an oligarchy, in a society that's controlled by the wealthy, very wealthy people invest in wealth defense. They hire this army of tax attorneys and accountants and wealth managers, and they create family offices for this purpose of defending wealth against taxation and accountability generally. So it's and what I've noticed, though, is just in my lifetime, just how much it's grown, how it's really mushroomed as inequality has also grown.
So what did the wealth advisors who help rich families manage their money and assets recommend to you?
Well,
the inheritor of the Oscar Mayer fortune, or at least part of it.
Yeah, well, I wasn't fortunately or unfortunately, I wasn't in the dynasty category there. I would be considered sort of small potatoes, but I could see, you know, watching in my extended family and certainly other wealthy families that I became acquainted with, what these wealth managers do is they'll sit down and they say, look, you know, here's the menu of things. We're going to create a trust where, you're the beneficiary or your children are the beneficiary. And we're going to take that wealth and put it in a trust and we're sort of going to put it into a form of ownership limbo. So if anybody says who owns this wealth, nobody's going to raise their hand because it's in a kind of trust limbo state. We also might take some of your wealth and put it in a bank account in another country in a secrecy jurisdiction where the banks don't have to report. And we might create a couple shell companies and probably we'll do some combination of all those things so that we have a number of layers of protection and sort of a number of shells in the shell game. And we can create transactions between these entities that you can say are actually business transactions and that will lower your taxes. So you're going to lower your income taxes, your estate taxes, which is our national inheritance tax. And you may also put some of that in a charitable foundation, take a big tax break, but then keep that money in your foundation as another extension of your influence and power.
So and you tell a funny story about two elderly women who were highly critical of you when they learned that you planned to donate your inheritance to charities.
Well, if you look at it from this perspective of, you know, the goal in life is to accumulate and pass on wealth, they were alarmed that I was going to, and this is the phrase of the wealthy, touch the principal, you know, touch the assets, the corpus of the wealth. You know, you can do quirky things with the income, you can give it away, you can invest it, but don't touch the principal, don't touch the assets. And if you do that, you're kind of taking wealth away from future generations. That's how they viewed it. And I viewed it as like, this is a weird system, and I don't think it's a good thing for both children to have unlimited inheritances, and I don't think it's a good thing for society to have these wealth dynasties. So I sort of got off the merry-go-round, if you will.
My guest on Leonard Lopate at Large here on WBAI New York 99.5 FM and streaming live at WBAI.org is Chuck Collins, whose latest book is The Wealth Hoarders, How Billionaires Pay Millions to Hide Trillions. It is published by Polity Books. The IRS estimates that the top 100% of households fail to report about 21% of their income. And that's because this army of tax attorneys, accountants, and wealth managers have been able to find ways to hide it.
Yes, absolutely. And I would say that is the tip of the iceberg because they're just talking about income. What I'm digging into is wealth, assets, and even the income that comes from wealth. And that's where the real gaming comes in. You know, most of us are used to getting taxes taken out of our paychecks, withholding. You know, we're paying our taxes on a paycheck by paycheck basis. But the super wealthy, because their income is not coming from wages, it's coming from investments and capital and other sources, have way more opportunities to kind of game the system.
And they hide billions by deploying anonymous shell companies, family offices, offshore accounts, opaque trusts, sham transactions. So as a result, do the world's richest people pay next to no taxes?
We absolutely don't know. We know that the tax obligations of the wealthy keep going down. We know that, for instance, billionaires, to the extent the IRS can track this, pay an effective tax rate closer to 23% on all of their income and wealth, which is lower than a lot of professionals, a lot of teachers and nurses and the like. So we know that they're whatever taxes they're paying is significantly lower than it would have been, say, under President Dwight Eisenhower, when taxes were quite progressive. I think we're seeing is a trend of steadily declining taxes on the wealthy. And I guess it's obvious, but when the rich pay less, the rest of us are picking up the slack and paying more, or we're seeing budget cuts and kind of phony austerity leading to service cuts. So it's the reason we should care is this is shifting tax obligations off the rich and onto everyone else.
So are shell companies incorporated in Delaware and trust companies in South Dakota the most common devices being used these days?
They certainly are within the United States. Once you've created an anonymous shell company or a trust, then you can go on and purchase other assets and own them anonymously. So the money is maybe just in that luxury real estate building down the street in New York. We happen to know luxury real estate is one of the places wealthy people are parking their money, as well as art and jewelry and other asset classes, as they call them.
According to the New York Times, 54% of real estate purchased in New York City for more than $5 million was acquired in the name of anonymous shell companies in 2014. In the six most expensive condo projects in the city, the owners in a majority of units were hidden by shell companies, including 77% of the units in 157 and 69% of the units at the Plaza. And the value of the 900 condominiums in six buildings was equal to the value of 20,000 average American homes. That's shocking.
Yeah, and this is happening in all major metropolitan areas of the United States. I mean, New York is obviously a really attractive destination, but let's be clear. Wealth, mostly these are empty units. I would call them wealth storage units, just like when you drive down the interstate and you see American storage units where people have their extra stuff. This is a form of wealth storage. And if you are a Russian oligarch or an African dictator and you've stolen money from your own people. Or a Saudi prince in the case of Boston and New York recently, you sanitize the money, as they say. You sort of run it through a shell company somewhere. But then where does it go? You know, it's not literally sitting on some Caribbean island. It's in real estate. It's in real property. It's down the street in that tower that you're looking up at right now. So that's one of the attractive destinations for global illicit funds.
And hasn't Delaware been called the largest source of anonymous shell entities in the world?
Yeah, no, it really is. And, you know, while other countries are sort of cracking down on this whole idea of an anonymous company, Delaware, you know, continues to do this. And really, all we're asking is that if you own a corporation, you have to have the same level of disclosure as if you're getting a library card, right? So if you go to the New York Public Library and you say, I'd like a library card. They say, well, what's your name? Say, well, I'm not going to give you my name. Well, where do you live? Well, I'm not going to tell you. Well, sorry, you can't borrow books from the New York Public Library. We need to know who you are and where you live. And all we're asking is for the library card level of disclosure, which seems quite reasonable, given that these companies have so much power and wealth.
So it's easier to set up a shell company than to register to vote in Georgia?
It's infinitely easier. It's easier than getting a fishing license or a library card, and certainly registering to vote in certain states.
And you mentioned earlier that some of the companies are engaged in criminal activities. Backpage.com, which was known as the world's top online brothel, a website that was involved in nearly three quarters of the 10,000 child trafficking reports received annually by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And El Chapo was in Delaware, and Bernie Madoff, and who else?
Quite an honor roll of shame. And it's funny because that is in some ways what has embarrassed the state of Delaware. You have all these religious leaders in Delaware saying, how come our state is the premier corporate destination for sex trafficking operations? Why do they come here to avoid law enforcement? And I think that level of embarrassment and public shame is beginning to crack, I think, you know, even the hard-nosed wealth defenders of Delaware are having a hard time justifying some of those behaviors.
You mentioned that some of the people involved in the Trump administration have used it. Didn't Robert Mueller find that Paul Manafort and Rick Gates deployed 9 Delaware LLCs and corporations to hide millions in payments between Ukrainian and U.S. officials?
Yep, that's right. You know, the famous Mueller report disclosed and the tracing of these Delaware-based companies. We know that Michael Cohen, Trump's fixer, used a Delaware company to pay off Stormy Daniels, the hired. How do we refer to her? She worked for Trump under the table. So
intimate friend.
Yeah. So the hush money payments came through a Delaware limited liability company. So this is what we know about because either some lawsuit or some criminal prosecution cracked open the secrets. But there's probably lots of things we don't know about because of the secrecy.
Does it continue to grow? Has the pandemic had an impact?
The signs are, and of course, this pandemic has been so hard on so many people economically and in terms of health and loss of life. We know that the billionaire class has just thrived under this pandemic. The 660 billionaires in the United States have seen their wealth go up, $1.3 trillion. And we've been sort of monitoring the chatter, if you will, within the wealth defense industry, as they were anticipating the Biden presidency and the possibility of Democrats having a majority in Congress, that industry went into high alert, notifying their clients, working with them to move money out of certain accounts and into these dynasty trusts, moving money offshore or moving money wherever. We of course, a lot of it's secret, so we don't know the exact details, but you could just tell from the seminars and discussions and the fact that these people were very busy working with very wealthy clients. And I would akin it to, hey, look, we've had this rough year. We've had, under Trump, $7.8 trillion of additional deficit spending, including his $2 trillion tax cut for the rich. We've run up a huge tab. At some point, the bill is going to come due, and America's rich are like slipping out the back door of the restaurant, trying to avoid the bill. And and that's another reason why we should, vigilantly move to shut down this hidden wealth system.
Now, it isn't just Delaware and South Dakota. Other states also have gotten involved. Alaska, Nevada. Do they just have less extensive approaches?
Yeah, they're trying to compete. They're trying to capture a share of that hidden wealth market, that dynasty trust market. And so they have also, their wealth defense industries have approached their state legislature. And by the way, these are typically small states with, voluntary legislatures that don't have big populations. And so, a small industry can go to that legislature and say, hey, this will create 500 jobs in the wealth management sector. You're not going to see these laws in states like New York or Massachusetts or California because, those industries don't rule. They don't have as much power. But in a smaller state, they make that case. So you've seen, a couple dozen states now lower their standards. But South Dakota has a task force whose purpose is to always make sure they're one step ahead of everyone else in terms of lowering their standards. So it's kind of like setting the primary date for, around the country. It's like whatever state proposes, they'll go lower. And that seems to be the game.
We'll get back to South Dakota after we take a little break. You're listening to Leonard Lopate at Large on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and streaming live at WBAI.org. back with Chuck Collins, whose latest book is The Wealth Hoarders, with a long subtitle, How Billionaires Pay Millions to Hide Trillions. Mr. Collins is a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., where he directs the program on inequality and co-edits inequality.org. He's the author of a number of books as well.